Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts, check them out. They appreciate it. Good morning, August 18th, 2021. Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Tom. Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy hump day. Celebrated it this morning with a little excursion.
A little excursion, a little sweaty run.
I think we could have got sweaty walking.
Yes.
I got sweaty getting
standing.
Up. Yeah. I got sweaty getting up.
No, it was smarmy out there this morning.
Well, we haven't really, I mean, you and I, we used to do that like every other day.
True.
I mean, we've definitely cut back on our swarmy adventures.
Yes.
I definitely like this time of the year. For some reason, I like a good sweat.
Yeah. I'm perspirationally gifted, as we know, so.
Mr. Moisture.
Yeah. There he is.
You put it out. You change the water.
Making puddles wherever he goes.
Christine's like, where was he sitting? Oh, no, I see his feet. His two wet feet in front of the chair.
In front of the chair. On the outdoor porch. I didn't do it in the house this time.
So you celebrated your big birthday.
I did. I didn't know you were going to bring that up. Yes, I did.
I didn't either, but it just came to mind.
The big 6-0.
Well, I think, you know,
it was strange.
Is it?
Well, you know, I think back to when I was a kid and what I thought of as 60, you know, and I guess it's also, you know, it's that decade that people usually retire in. You know, it's kind of the target retirement age is 65, so you think, you know, or somewhere around there. So you start to think that, I mean, you can start thinking of yourself as old, and, you know, certainly you're older, but right. I think old is different. Like in 60s different from when we were kids, you know?
Well, I think old is, I mean, 60s different when you're looking at it at 40, but when you're at 60, you're like, hey, it ain't so bad. It's not that
no,
old.
No, and you feel good. Knock wood, I'm healthy and, and you know, we're able to go out there and run. Not the way we used to, maybe, right. Exactly, but, you know, I feel strong, I feel good, and there's a lot of stuff I still want to do. So, but it is strange mentally, just that number.
Well,
you know, you can give a lot of power to it, I think, if you want to.
You know, I think it's, you know, I kind of compare like growing up to like getting a little bit sober where, you know, early on sobriety, it's about, you know, getting better, looking better, getting through it, you know, a lot of self-motivated kind of stuff. And then as I've gotten older and as I've gotten farther along in sobriety, it becomes less about sobriety and more about serenity. And you know, and I see that as like working out. You know, when we were younger, it was about looking good. But now it's like, God, just keep me sane. Keep me part, you know, what do I say? People that participate like to participate, you know. So keep me participating and involved. And, you know, and then I'm not even really care about how I look anymore. It's just keep me sane.
Well, you're lying, first of all.
Okay.
We know you care about how you look a little bit. I do know what you mean. I'm just kidding. I mean,
I'm kind of lying, of course, but, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody cares a little bit about how they look, but you're right. The focus has shifted. There's no question about the emphasis is different and what you're looking for out of it and how much you care about what other people think. All that has shifted. And it's all about, I mean, for me, you know, I love the physical impact of getting out there and running, walking, working out a little. You know, and I don't work out like I used to, you know, but yeah, I get out there and do push-ups and squats and that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, to take care of myself physically, but it also, like, the mental and spiritual benefit of it is off the charts for me. Like, it's night and day, days where I've gone out there and taken care of that. My serenity level, my ability to sidestep confrontation, to not take things too seriously, you know, all of that is increased. I won't say exponentially, but it's, you know, but substantially increased compared to if I don't, or if I'm not rested, if I'm not eating right, you know, I mean, it's the whole thing. Like we said, the whole package, everything
Well, and I think
everything feeds everything else.
When we're younger, we put up with more, right? We put up with people and opinions. And then as we get older and as we, you know, seek out more serenity and more thoughtfulness, we learn, like, okay, that I don't need that in my life. You know, I can't.
Yeah, I don't need to engage necessarily. You know, it's like somebody states their opinion. It's like, okay, I don't, you know, it's like a friend, we were talking about Zoom meetings. I was talking with a fellow educator about Zoom meetings. You know, we have so many Zoom meetings. And she said to me, I try to practice wait, W-A-I-T. Why am I talking?
You know,
it's just a great question. It's like, you know, if I'm in the middle of the meeting and I'm talking, I should ask myself, do I really need to be talking, or do I just want to get myself heard?
Right.
Am I contributing anything of value, or is it just a matter of I like to hear my voice and I want other people to think of me as important?
Do you think that falls under restraint of pen and tongue?
Absolutely.
Because sometimes that's more like, you know, I tell my kids, just go on your second thought. You know, whatever your first thought is, think about your first thought, but see what the second thought is. Maybe think about going with that, you know, whether it's a commenting or purchasing. My kids, they live in a time now where you and I did not grow up in, where my son, 15, makes a lot of money working, and he has a bank account, and he has, like, Amazon. I mean, packages are showing up. I mean, this, you know, it's easy to go on the first thought.
Sure.
You know, and I'm like, God, I can, you know, I wasn't buying things like this. I wasn't helping the economy like this at 15 like my kids are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, restraint from pen and tongue, you know.
Well, it's like that great checklist, though, right? You know, first of all, is it true? Then does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? Does it need to be said by me now? You know, if I can remember to go through that checklist.
That's a long list.
But I mean, you know, like, it's just got different levels. You know, if it's not true, it's got no business being said. You know, if I have no foundation for it, you know, I'm just spewing something. And then it's like, okay, it's true. Does it need to get said? You know, maybe it does. Do I need to be the one to say it, or is it going to be taken up right by the person if I say it? And then does it need to be said now, or could I take it offline with somebody, right? Do I need to say it in a meeting with someone, or can I, after the meeting, you know, give them a call and say, you know, I was thinking about this during the meeting, but I didn't want to say it, and I just wanted you and I to talk about it. You know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah,
it's just being a little bit more thoughtful about those things. And it's the same thing you're talking about, like saying to your kids, you know, second thought. Like, wait a minute and see whether, you know, don't be impulsive. Because a lot of times that has a bad result. Whereas waiting and reconsidering, it doesn't usually lead to a lot of bad results. You know what I mean?
Well, and there's, maybe you and I talked about this, but someone said that they think there's probably 5 original stories in the world. You know, and then the rest is just all made up and hearsay.
It's all embellishment.
Yeah, it's all embellishment, people's versions. And you know, so to get to the truth, you know, who knows?
Yeah, whose truth?
Whose truth, right?
Which truth?
Well, and I think, you know, understanding that, knowing that that is the case, helps us realize that maybe it is or is not as important to, like you said, be the messenger, right? Sometimes we just sit back and let other people do it.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, I guess now, you know, like, and we've talked about this before, but I'm at that point where, you know, I take time in the morning to think about how I want my day to go and to focus on, you know, and the 3 most important things that I try to keep in the forefront and that I think about in the morning, hoping that they will be there the rest of the day, are simplicity, patience, and compassion. You know, keep it simple, be patient, and when somebody, you know, loses it, try to be compassionate. Something's happening with them that you may not understand. You know, you don't have to, I don't have to take it personally.
Yeah.
You know, whatever's happening with them. You know, it happened to my wife the other day. She had an email from a colleague from a different university. We had sent this individual materials involved with a committee that we're working on. And she was really upset at the state of the materials, and she went off. And my wife responded with this really kind message saying, I'm sorry, we sent the materials the way you asked for them. We thought, if there's anything I can do for you. And then, you know, the other person came back and said, I felt bad about that email right after I sent it. You know, so it's like, I mean, you know, that's
they did not go on the second thought.
They did not go on the second thought, exactly, you know. And I'm often grateful that I have... you know, a spouse who's in the same profession that I'm in, because I rarely send an email where I don't run it past her first and say, just listen to this. And she usually tells me to change a sentence or two, and it's usually the very first sentence. She's much better at being, like, she remembers to be gracious up front and to be nice up front. And I sometimes get right to business and I forget to do that. But that little bit of graciousness up front, it really wins you a lot of ground. You know what I mean?
Or fuels a flame. You're like, I don't really know. You can do the gracious thing, huh? I'll show you.
Well, it can bring that response.
It's definitely a better position than the opposite.
Yeah, it's just, you know, people are people and they're dealing with a lot of stuff. And, you know, sometimes they fire something off and they're not thinking about it. And, you know, at first when that message came in, I mean, you know, my wife was hurt and angry.
Yeah.
You know, and because this person had asked for something in a special way that we didn't have. Everybody else we sent it to electronically, she wanted it in hard copy, and it's a pain in the neck because it's like a 450-page document we had to send her in hard copy. You know, so it's like, you know, you get.
So you had a justified resentment.
Well, justifiable.
Justifiable.
Potentially. You know, if you want to justify it, you can. I think, and you can spend time doing that. Yeah, but. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are justifiable resentments, and you know, then the conversation's different. It's like if you confront the person, you have to say, look, this is how I responded to this. This is how this landed on me. But you're not, you know, I mean, pointing the finger and saying you is not the good approach I've found.
Well, I know, but just as I consider myself an average human, right? Not advanced, not held back, just a normal guy riding down the road. And I know that a lot
Joe
of
Joe Sixpack, Joe, without the six-pack.
Without six-pack. Without Joe. But Tom, no six-pack.
Tom, no six-pack.
But, you know, we talked about this. This is the week that our buddy Matt passed. And,
yeah.
And you know, I remember him telling me.
7 years. It's crazy.
7 years, his anniversary. His passing is the 20th. So, but this was that week. But he used to say, you know, guys like me, you and me are arrogant. And I used to laugh. What does that mean? He goes, the rules don't apply to us.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so true.
Oh, I lived that way for so long.
Well, but it can still, you know. And
yeah, it can creep in.
Yeah, well, later I would learn that, you know, it's my peace of mind is based on my life being convenient. You know, and if I start having these inconveniences start showing up, these arrogance levels starts to rise. You know, and I always use the example with my kids. It's like, you know, if my kids are on time, we got to get to school, everybody's running time, everybody get in the car, everything's fine, I'm letting people in, you know, you go. You know, I'm thoughtful, considerate. But if we're running behind, I'm fucking driving through that graveyard over there by Wawa. I'm running by a new set of rules. So, you know, you can always have the best intentions. I think it was an eye-opening revelation to find out that how much my arrogance was based on the conveniences in my life. And so I think what we're seeing right now is a lot of people are inconvenienced, you know, with just the unknown, right? The pandemic, we go up, we go down. And I think we're seeing people start to expose their frustrations, you know, just in behaviors and maybe don't understand. I mean, the only reason I or you understand it is because we had to, because we were like pressed against the wall. We had to learn about that kind of stuff. But some people are just out there blindfolded going, you know, I am just so pissed and don't really understand why.
Yeah, when you say you're talking about like having a set of guidelines to follow, like that sort of help you address that. When you say you and I we're different.
No, you and I are a lot the same. You and I had to figure it out because we wanted to stay sober.
Oh, that's what. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was understanding what you're saying
about
that.
This
yeah.
Sober meeting. I mean,
No. I mean, I get that. No, it was a life or death thing. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be able to go on if I continued drinking. I didn't know how to stop drinking. So yeah.
Yeah, but you also, but you know,
no, I had to find a different format.
You want to quit drinking? We definitely want to get off the sauce, but then you also want to find some serenity. You know, you want to find some peace of mind.
And well, you start to realize those are linked. Yeah,
they're linked. They're very linked.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we're seeing a lot of people because listen, I don't know about you, but I'm running into a lot of upset, angry, short fused, arrogant kind of people, and I think it's because of what we're going through. And I just don't think a lot of people have their finger on the association, the relationship between inconvenience and arrogance.
Yeah, it's an exhausting time for a lot of people, you know? I mean, and people deal with frustrations that I certainly know nothing about, you know? I mean, being a teacher, I may have had to do everything on Zoom, but I was at least able to continue my work.
Yeah.
You know, and there are a lot of people who it altered their work in much more substantial ways, and they got worried about, you know, how's money going to come in and things like that. So, I mean, it's all, there's a lot of pressures that people are suffering under out there. And I don't, you know, I mean, I just, my grandson was over for, he was in first grade, and he was over at our house and did 2 days of first grade in our house. And I thought that his first grade teacher in New Jersey deserved an absolute medal and like, trophies and a parade. Because she was keeping 30 first graders occupied on Zoom, and she was doing it, mm-hmm. you know? And I just, I imagined her at the end of the day just, like, knocking back three martinis just to try to, like, you know come what back I mean? To, just try to come back, back to some kind of semblance of, yeah. of you know, relaxation, because it was, you know. But, yeah, I mean, people are, there's certainly, it has been a challenging time, and it looks like the challenging time's not over. You know, it's going to continue to be challenging, and that's... That's something, you're talking before about the rules. I just remember my ex-wife adopted a couple of daughters, and her second adopted daughter, when she was five, she got in trouble in school, and she was called down to the principal's office, you know, and the she was taught, she was a talker, you know, and so she was talking in class when she shouldn't have been, and she got sent down to the principal's office, and the principal said to her, you know, Kelsey, we have rules, you know, why you were sent down here? And she's like, no. She says, well, we have rules. And the little five-year-old girl said, oh, the rules are not for me.
Right.
Exactly. I'm like, that's the five-year-old that lives in me. The rules are not for me. They're for other people.
I didn't understand that until it was pointed out by, and actually it was pointed out by a guy that I had a lot of respect for. So, and if it may have been anybody else, I may have not even noticed. But when he said it, when he talked to me, I listened.
And he was saying it about himself too. He knew right. that, you know, he wasn't like accusing you of something that he wasn't aware of in himself. And that's, right. That's what makes that relationship in recovery work. You know, that's why.
It's a we program.
Yeah, that's why somebody can help somebody else, because it's like, I get you from the inside, you know.
Well, I mean, we take away the drinking part, and that's easy to fix, you know, so to speak. But it's that, you know, struggling with going on our second thought, avoiding, you know, getting into it, mixing it up, you know.
Yeah, living life on life's terms as opposed to my...
And life's terms lately have been crazy.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's exactly right.
So you're doing the thing at the library. You said you were doing...
I'm doing a few things at the library, actually. The Lewis Library's been great. There's a guy over there who's a volunteer. He used to be involved in theater in Denver. His name is David White. He's a lovely guy. And he got me involved in the spoken word program that he's doing. So I'm working on a play. Over there, but I also, we decided to do this Shakespeare acting intensive for high school students, because I'm a pretty experienced Shakespearean actor at this point.
You're a Shakespeare
guy. Yeah, and Sadie Andros, who teaches theater over there at Cape Henlopen High School, she's my co-presenter for this, so we're doing it together, and it's just 3 weeks. We meet a few times a week, and we just cut the comedy Much Ado About Nothing. We cut it down to an hour version, or about an hour version. We have 10 students who are going to play all the roles. And then we're going to put a performance of it on next Thursday evening, you know, just so it's not very much time to get it up. They're going to memorize it. They're great. They're really dedicated, fun bunch of kids. Most of them are from Cape because they, you know, they heard about it through Sadie. But we have a couple from other schools as well. And it's the maiden voyage of this, but we're hoping it'll become a thing. Because the library does a Shakespeare festival. They've done it now for several years in the fall, in September, late September. And I've given lectures at it a couple of times. I did, you know, for the past manifestations of it, you know, in past years. Last year it didn't happen because of COVID. But this year they're bringing down Brown Box Theater from Massachusetts, and the guy who runs the theater is from the Maryland area originally, so he has connections down here in Berlin and that. So they've brought performances down before, and they're bringing one down this time of Much Ado About Nothing, the comedy. So we thought it would be a good idea if the kids sort of studied that play and acted in that play, and so they're sort of ready for this troupe when they come down.
Does that change the dynamics when you have like a quick turnaround? I mean, you just kind of do it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, it's and this is a kind of a workshop version of the play. So we're not worrying about full costumes. We want to do a little costuming that just suggests the characters. But we're more concerned that, you know, the kids get a chance to experience Shakespeare, the great poetry of Shakespeare and the characters, and that they get familiar with Shakespeare's text. And what happens in any production that you do, you have to cut the text. You have to make decisions about what are we keeping, what are we going to get rid of, how long do we want this to run. And they were great about that stuff. They were just terrific, you know. So so there's that, and then I'm doing a reading of a Mary Shelley story for the Halloween presentation at the library in October, too, so...
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
So is this new that they're doing this year, or is this something they've been doing and we just didn't know about?
No, they have a few new programs. Like this guy, David White, has been very eager to, because of his theater background, I think, to have performances of spoken word things. So they had a whole short story program that they were doing on Sundays and Wednesdays at noon. And they did it over the past year or so. I read one story for it. They have an actor come in and read a story. And it was on Zoom, so a lot of people attended. And so, you know, they get a short story and of about, I guess, 15 minutes duration. And they do it as a kind of lunchtime thing. And they have two stories during the period. So this actor that I know, her name is Suzanne Savoy. Her mom and dad were from this area, and Jean and Prue, and she came from this area, so she's been organizing that, and she had actor friends from all over come and be part of the reading. So it's very cool,
It's cool. I like I like Shakespeare because some of our runs that we used to do, and I was doing that vlog, and I'd make you recite Shakespeare. And I wouldn't know what the hell you were saying. I knew what you were saying, but I don't know if it was right.
Right.
And so you could...
I have a lot of it memorized, and I'm usually pretty good. I don't make too many mistakes.
I'm not going to put you on the spot this time.
You can put me on the spot anytime you want.
We got busted that one time. The guy's like, you missed a word or something.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, I might have cut a line because sometimes I learn speeches with cuts in them for a production, so...
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll cut a line or something because it was cut in the production I was in.
I'm always impressed because I just saw somebody posted something that said, I'd like to know the part of my brain that used to remember phone numbers. What is it doing right now? Because I can't remember anything. I don't know if I've just seen and heard too much or I've run out of space or I don't care, but I struggle.
Yeah, I think it's just, the workout. It's like you don't have to, so you lose sort of the muscle there, I mean, it's not a muscle, but, it's that pathway in the brain doesn't have its same workout. But I think you could probably get it back if you had to. But now we have this little brain outside our brain that we don't have to.
No, I relinquished all responsibility to the phone.
Well, it's amazing. I'll be driving with Anne and we'll be, on a trip or something and a song will come into one of our heads and we'll go, what's that? What's the next part of that lyric? And in the past, we used to just go, oh, what's the next part of that lyric? And we used to go, I don't remember. And now we can look it up immediately and learn the lyric and remember who recorded it and where it was on the charts, which is great on one level. But on another level, it was sort of cool that we could just let it go in the past. We'd be like, I forgot that.
It's funny. I'll sing along with the song and I realize I don't know any of the words.
Yeah. Did you ever see... there's a great YouTube clip from the Graham Norton show. It's a talk show in Britain.
Yeah.
And Jack Black is on with Elton John. And he does this moment where he sings. He doesn't remember the lyrics to the Elton John song. But he says, that song you do? And then he starts to sing it with like faux lyrics. And he goes, and Elton John's face was just fantastic. Like as he was exactly. The whole and I forget which song it was, but just watching Jack Black do that and watching Elton John's reaction was pretty great.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if Elton John even remembers all the lyrics.
Well, that was the look on his face. Was like he didn't really seem to remember,
Well, they were talking about, a big fan of Pearl Jam, and they're trying to get a tour going, hopefully in 22, I don't know. But they're like, we're going to literally have to go relearn all of our songs because, we've had this long break.
Yeah, what's remarkable, when you think about what some of those artists hold in their heads,
Well, you see a lot of them using the teleprompter now. I mean,
yeah,
I can't imagine. I'd really be struggling.
Yeah.
I guess they probably, you know, Pearl Jam will do, you know, 30 songs. And then they'll play another night and do 30 different songs. Yeah. So they don't have this continuous same set list. So they're learning.
Yeah.
But you know, Eddie Vedder, he'll skip over a few words.
Well, I saw Springsteen a few years ago in D.C., and, you know, I mean,
still good.
He's no youngster. He's still great, and he's tireless on stage. And the concert goes on for over 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, I know he takes little breaks and goes back and gets a different guitar, but it's not much, you know, and he switches it up all the time, from what I understand.
Did you see him and Jimmy Fallon do the New Jersey Turnpike skit?
No.
Stuck on the Jersey. Remember that whole Governor Chris Christie's, you know, I forget what he did.
Right, went to the beach when nobody else was.
Yeah, he shut the highway down so he could get through something. But he made a whole parody on it the song and Jimmy Fallon, you know, dressed up just like Bruce. For I don't know how old Bruce Springsteen is, 70, you think?
He's getting close to that anyway. He's like 68, I think.
I mean, his arms. He looks like his arms are better looking than mine.
Guy's in shape.
He is.
Guy's in shape.
I don't know if that's money or just jeans, or money spent on good jeans. I don't know.
I don't know. I think he found working out sort of, he was at a tricky point in his career, and he found both therapy and working out at the same time. And, you know, I read his biography recently, which is very, very good. And a really, really interesting read about his relationship with his dad and his relationship with his family and just sort of what he learned along the way. You know, he's a pretty humble guy. And so the book was really good.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Well, I know him and Eddie Vedder just released a remix of Highway to Hell on Tom Morello's album. I'm like, it was a weird song for all three of them to me personally. Yeah. For Bruce Springsteen, Eddie Vedder, and Tom Morello to do Highway to Hell.
That is an odd choice.
It was an odd choice, but so I just saw that. Hopefully we'll start.
But they're famous. They can do what they like.
They can do what they like. I mean, I always say Eddie Vedder could sing the Happy Birthday and I'd buy it. By happy birthday.
Yeah, well, it is quite a voice. I mean, that's a very distinctive voice.
Well, and hopefully, so September 24th, we got Firefly. Have you been ever?
I have not. It's not the kind of thing that I seek out, to be honest with you.
Because of music?
Because I'm a sweaty person, and it just sounds sweaty
great
to me.
Great news. Great news. It's September the 24th. It's fallish.
Well, it used to be true around here, but a lot of times September is quite hot around here now.
So you're avoiding for the sweat factor.
The crowds and it's not a thing I seek out, like going around with a bunch of crowds.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just getting old and crotchety, but you know, it's not something that I immediately go, "Oh yeah, I want to go to that." I mean, I like music and I like going to live music. I don't go with like the frequency that you'd go with, and I sometimes think I should go see that more, but I'm more, you know, the theater, you know, kind of thing.
Shut in.
No.
Yes, you're a shut in. Admit it.
All right, I have been for the last year. I have been a shut in.
You're like.
Like everyone else.
Well, I think it's, listen, I can, you know, there was, you know, Firefly, I don't know when it started coming here. There was some years I had not gone and I had an opinion. I was like, oh, these people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not seeking all these. I was like you and ended up going and really had a nice time. I think they do a nice job of it. It's a great opportunity to see a lot of bands in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately and fortunately, where we're located, you know, most of our entertainment for, you know, that sort of level of band is in D.C. or is in Philly. And sometimes that's just far enough that I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
But close enough that I'm like, I should have. So to have the Firefly Festival come, and I'm just like you. I don't like a lot of people. But it's actually very chill. And
I've heard it's very well run. Like my students have written about it in my classes, you know, when I've given different assignments and some of them have been to Firefly and they've written about it. And it sounds terrific. You know, it sounds like it's a very well run.
Well, and there, at no gig. Point, there's a, at no, I don't feel at any point during my visit there, am I in a place where I'm feeling uncomfortable. Now, there are places you can get to be uncomfortable, like to the front of a, up on the rail at one of the concerts. You know, if you want to get up front and get in the mix, sure. But there's plenty of room to be out on the outskirts, watching on monitors, and still getting to have the experience without being, you know, touching people.
Touching people.
You don't want to touch
anybody.
It's not
like Woodstock.
No, it's not like Woodstock. It is not like Woodstock. Right. So, you know, I understand. But if you get a chance or something catches you, you know, it's a fun day.
Yeah.
We buy the VIP tickets, which allows us to, you know.
Does that give you like 3 days to go?
No, VIP, there's, listen, it's.
Because it's like a 3 or 4 day thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
But
so you just go for the one day, or do you go over multiple
days? I think we
days?
Might go 2 days. David, my son's David's staying the whole, going the whole weekend. He's just.
But he's 15, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you do when you're 15.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. If I were 15, I might definitely be into that. No. You know, but I'm just like, at this age, no.
Shut in.
Shut in. Crotchety old man.
Well, like I said.
60 now. I'm 60 years old now.
One day, you know.
I don't even remember where I was headed.
Bell and the Kettlebell Kids might show up in concert, and you'd be, that's my favorite band.
I might be.
And they're at Spotify or at Firefly, and you're going, all right, we're going in.
All right.
It was great. All right,
the Killers are there. I'm going.
The Killers are playing Friday.
I know.
Let's do it.
I heard they were going to be there.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You got this.
We'll think about it.
No, you're not.
Think about it.
Well, I think it is a. It is a lot of fun. So hopefully maybe we'll get you to go, but I definitely understand. It is a big commitment.
I'll talk to Ann about it, because Ann's the real music enthusiast in our household. You know?
I bet she would have an awesome time.
Yeah.
Well, and
the only way, because she's 5 foot, crowds sometimes freak her out a little bit if they get too much, you know.
That's what I'm telling you. Little, I'm here. The message I'm putting in front of you is that you have a lot of options and they don't have to be in the crowd.
That we've got an idea about this that may not be the right idea.
Thursday night, Billie Eilish.
That's pretty pretty attractive possibility.
You might actually make some brownie points.
Yeah.
Hey, Sugar Pants, I got a ticket for Billie Eilish tonight.
How'd you know I called her Sugar Pants? No, I'm just kidding. I do not call her Sugar Pants.
Oh, you should.
Maybe.
So the
I'm not sure how she'd take to that.
She'd be like, I love you.
I love you.
What is she going to? Now that's it. I've had it. I'm not taking this abuse anymore with this Sugar Pants.
She's having a stressful day as it is today. She took our new kitten to be adjusted, to be fixed.
Oh. Yeah,
so she's all worried about the kitten.
Oh. And then you got to put the collar on them?
I don't know if they need a collar. I don't know.
They do.
Do they? Yeah.
The hood.
The hood. All then, everything's good in the hood.
Yeah, the hood never stays on.
Yeah.
We got Cookie... Adjusted.
Yes.
We couldn't even keep the hood on her. I'm like, look at, I don't care. Do whatever you want.
You know, I don't want a bunch of kittens, but I have to say, this new cat that we got is so pretty that part of me was like, oh, it's too bad this cat can't have kittens, because that's a pretty cat. That cat would make pretty cats, I think.
I think if that cat could play soccer, you'd vicariously live through that freaking cat.
You're absolutely right. I love that cat.
You're like, my cat's
I'm not that guy who's like, I love that cat, but this cat, I love that cat.
I'm starting to see the trifecta. I see 2 points of the trifecta. Shut in. Cats.
Catman. Catman, shut in.
What's the third?
What's the third? I start knitting. I don't know.
One more lockdown. One and more. Then you're,
start, I'll start the, quilting.
A lot. No. But you might start having multiple litter boxes throughout the house.
Oh, God.
We'll have to come and do a rescue. Cat rescue.
We've got two cats in the house and 8 that Ann feeds on the porch.
Yeah.
They're all fixed, though.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's the new cat's name?
New cat is Zuzu.
So is Zuzu a wild cat?
No. No, she was part of a litter. A friend of ours works in cat rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if the mother was feral, was picked up feral, but... But this cat has been really well acclimated from the time she was born, so she's real fun, real friendly, really well behaved, all in all, you know.
We got Cookie, our latest cat, because we had 3 cats.
Right.
We had Gracie, Tommy, and Cookie. And then Cookie grew up and straight chased Gracie away.
Really?
Bitch.
Man.
Yeah. And Cookie was part of a feral litter that Tila that used to work for me found in a boat.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember seeing them when she brought them into the salon.
Yeah.
She had like 4 of them and they were just tiny.
Yeah. It's oh my so God. Cute. And we took one, Cookie. Oh, she feral.
Yeah.
You just, I think it's, she just has a look to her. She's like,
it just got territorial.
Yeah, she's a badass.
Oh, it just got territorial.
She's straight, she's Gracie away.
Yeah.
And she is.
She's the gangster cat.
Yeah, she's gangster. And I saw somebody, I posted this on my Facebook, I think it was the Far Side. And it said, this coupon allows you to have continuous access in and outside of this house. Like, basically, and if you have a cat like I do, it's like, goes to the door, meow. Like, oh, well, excuse me, let me stop what I'm doing and get up and let you out. Mm-hmm. And the cat goes out, and then it comes to the door. It's like, boom, boom, boom. It's like, okay, let me get it. It's like, I'm basically at this cat's beckoning call whenever it wants to come in and out of the damn house.
Yeah, well, we got Zuzu to sort of replace a cat that died, and so that she would be company for the other cat that's there. Bubble is the cat that's there, but Squeak died. But Squeak, and they were indoor cats, but we have that screened-in back porch, mm-hmm. and Squeak liked that back porch. So she would claw, like I'm getting doors replaced, you know, for other reasons, but I'm glad I'm getting that door replaced because she scratched the living hell out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And there's like woodwork in between the rooms too that she scratched, and it's just, you know, I mean, I love the cat, but it was really obnoxious.
Didn't you say you're getting new furniture too?
We're getting new furniture in the living room. Yep. There's a lot of things have to happen.
There's painting
that has to happen. It's reached critical mass.
Was there cat damage on the furniture?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had a cat.
Oh, you know about
up the
that.
Back of the couch.
No, I remember that.
Couch's guts fell out.
Yeah. No, we've got the same thing. We've got a couple of chairs. The armrests of the chair are just
so
pretty much done.
So how do we prevent a repeat?
I don't know. That's part of what we have to
figure out.
Investigate as we replace the furniture. Like, what are the best materials and, you know.
Canvas.
Yeah. Like, we have furniture in one room downstairs that they don't seem to tear into much. So,
well, a lot of times
we might be able to find something.
They communicate through destruction. They're like... It's like, meow. You're like, I see.
They're like crunks. They communicate.
I gotcha. I get your point. Let's let you out, okay? Thank you.
They communicate through destruction.
They're bastards. I can't stand them. I told the cat yesterday, I wish you'd leave. And then it left. Don't come back.
Oh, I'm coming back.
I'm coming back.
I know where the food is.
Have you always been a cat person, or is this something that you inherited through?
When I was growing up, we had a cat, we had a dog briefly, because my dad owned a bar in Queens, and he got somebody who came into the bar offered him a dog, and we had the dog for a little while, but it didn't work out. My dad had grown up in Ireland raising greyhounds and racing them, and so. But he was used to open spaces and raising dogs. And we were in Queens. He had a little tiny backyard. He thought it was cruel for the dog. So he didn't like, you know, we ended up giving the dog away. And we only had him like a week and a half or something, you know. But it bothered him. Yeah, we had a cat. I was lobbying for a dog. I was lobbying for a beagle because of Snoopy, I think, when I was a kid. And then we went to visit my aunt, and then her next-door neighbor had a litter of kittens, and so my sister got to pick out a kitten, and suddenly we weren't getting a dog. We had a cat.
Dogs were off the list.
They were off the list. My sister won. But I tend to like cats more than dogs. I like animals that sort of are disdainful of me and don't care about me. Dogs, like, every time you come in the house, they get all excited and they lick you, and that's too much for me.
You let it down.
It's too much for me.
You're just constantly
it's
letting
just too
the
much
dog down.
It's too much attention. I'm like, no.
I was at my in-laws, and I'm sitting there, the dog, they have a dog, and it's sitting by my leg looking up at me, and I'm like, you know, making, avoiding eye contact. And my father-in-law's like, the dog wants to be petted. I'm like, okay. Scratchy, scratchy.
I'd be like, so do I, but nothing's happening for me.
Scratchy, scratchy, like, I'm not getting involved with this damn dog.
Yeah.
Well, I can't even afford a dog. I mean, we barely can afford having cats, but you start to, I just had a client.
That's a lot of response. It's more responsibility a dog, too. You got to take it out and walk it. And, you know, it's not like, cats sort of are self-sufficient to a degree. You know?
Well, but when something goes wrong, you know, cats usually figure it out. They work it out.
Yeah.
But dogs... Like, oh, I'm sick. You're like, oh, God, let's take the dog to the vet. Mm-hmm. Then you're like
We're getting in trouble with all kinds of dog people now. You know that.
Why?
just because we're not being very favorable toward dogs. And some people really, really love dogs.
Actually, I'm not being favorable towards veterinaries. Dogs are great. I think there's a capitalizing on our relationship and love for our animal. Like, I don't know, it could die or you could pay $700. And you're like, here's $700. Well, I just, there's a lady, a client of mine, she's a lady, her husband passed away. She loves, all she has is this dog. Mm-hmm. And the dog is sort of dying, but they're still, she just got a $600 vet bill and they're trying, it's your buddy.
Well, no, the animal becomes part of the family. There's no question about it.
It's tough to, what price is too high?
No, it's true.
And it's tough because when they end up dying, you're like, damn, that was tough.
Yeah.
We had a dog, Sparky, passed. I was like, I never cried so hard. I have yet to cry so hard as the day when old Sparky boy passed away.
Old Sparky.
Old Sparky.
The old Sparky's flame went out.
The poof of smoke.
I wept. When his flame was
wept,
when his spark was extinguished,
I sprayed tears from my face. Yeah, it was such a disturbing moment. I won't get a dog. They're just too happy.
Yeah,
good old boys. So, what do you think about this? So, this is 2021. We had a weird summer last year. This is our first summer, really. Kind of, I don't know, sort of being back. Mm. Differences? You see? Are you feeling? I'm not going to lay any thoughts pre-thought in your mind about my opinions, but have you seen a difference this year? And are you okay with it?
I haven't seen a great deal of difference yet, I guess. And part of that is just because I'm
shut in.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's because of my profession. I mean, I was, teaching last year and it was distance. It was on Zoom and it was fine, but it also wasn't the way I like to do it. I like to be in the classroom with the students, and I like that kind of direct contact. And, we're scheduled to go back to that, but then there's also the Delta variant and the threat of that and how that might change things. So we're going back right now with masks, but I guess I'm holding back from sort of looking at it as everything's good again, because I don't think it is yet.
Well, I mean, just like the amount of people. I mean, the amount of people that have come here.
Yeah.
I mean, the traffic has changed. The businesses have changed. They're hoping we're starting to see. They're talking about opening that new Redner's over on 9. I think that's going to be a big help. People love to say, "Oh, we need more roads, right? Better roads." I think if you turned Route 1 into a 12-lane highway, it would still be packed. I don't think that is the big quick fix. I think it's about spreading out some of these businesses. Down here on the corner, they're going to put a gas station, a strip mall, and some apartments over here on Cave Neck and Route 1. I'm like, great. Because if I need gas, I'm driving into Rehoboth. So that's just one less car coming back and forth that I can get gas here. And if we could spread it out, maybe we could, lighten it up a smidge. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Milton, and just the amount of building that's going on is just, it's astounding.
You thought you had a secluded spot.
I did. Well, we did have a secluded spot when we were one of six houses on that row, but now we're one of several hundred houses on that row.
Oh, there's that many now?
There's that many. There's that many developments have gone in the last 4 or 5 years. And one of them, the Vines, is huge, and it's got another section that's going to start soon building. So they're selling right away. They're selling before they're built.
I think
is
the Vines the plan that they put on the cover of the Cape Gazette where
I don't know.
It shows I don't know how many houses are putting in there, but they had like a brewery built in there. They had like an amphitheater. They had a farmer's market. It looked like they had some amenities that they were planning on building in. And of course, you always hear, oh, yeah, they always want to do that in the beginning. But in the end, they run out of money and none of that shit ever gets finished. So, but I mean, if they're going to start building like that, it'd be kind of cool to have. And I think that was kind of the idea with Painter's Mill, was to have like some shops to stay here.
Sure.
But listen, if you had like a little grocery store, the problem is you can't, you got to be competitive with like a Giant, right? I mean, you're not going to pay more.
Yeah, well, there has to be enough value in the local grocery store to say that that's worth it for me not having to get on the highway and go down to you know, Giant or Acme or Weiss or wherever you're going. So I mean, I don't know. I don't know how. Like, I look at Route 9 now, and it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
You know what else I think is going on this year, more than ever, is Airbnbs. I think I hear.
You mean
more
down here around the beach area, or?
Well, you know, when I moved here 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it was, you know, you had summer rentals, and it was usually within the first couple blocks of the beach, right? It was like summer beach rentals, maybe a few blocks in, but it was usually in Rehoboth, Ocean View, Bethany, but it was always, but now, if you have a house in Milton, they'll rent it out, a seasonal rental like an Airbnb, a weekly rental, as a beach house.
Right, but I mean, when Ann moved down here 30 years ago, you know, there were no outlets. I mean, on Route 1, there were none.
Yeah, but there's a traffic jam at 8:30 in the morning.
I know, but I'm just saying that 30 years ago, the transformation in the last 30 years is off the charts, you know? And then there was a little bit of a downturn, you know, with 2008 when all that went down. Everything slowed down. You know, but now all the buildings revved up again, and it's just...
Well, there's a lot of population coming this way. And people.
Yeah.
But our business infrastructure hasn't changed
that
much.
Well, that's the problem, right? Because, I mean, you need infrastructure to support all that, and that means roads and expanding highways and changing the nature. You know, like, I mean, I grew up in Queens in New York, so it's at the beginning of Long Island, you know? And what's happening here... You know, it's a lot like what happened on Long Island, you know, and it's just, I mean, you know, and a history professor I worked with years ago who grew up on Long Island sort of predicted that. He said, this is going to be the Long Island of D.C. It's just going to explode
with
population. Yeah.
Well, yeah. New York is a little bit different, I would think.
Oh, no, it is. I mean, it's different in that it was, you know.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out at 8:30, why do we have a northbound traffic jam? And I'm just trying to figure out why do we have so many people? And then that seemed to be kind of like the only thing that I can find a real difference in what we're doing is that we're doing a lot more people, are renting out their places, more weekly rentals. So I think we're just seeing a lot of people come down. Maybe that's it. Not everybody, I think, that moves here goes to the beach every day.
Right.
You know, I think most of us are like, I'm not going out on Route 1. I'm just trying to figure out what are all the people? And a lot of them are Delaware tags. So I don't even, are they all going to work?
Well, I mean, you know.
Don't know.
No, I mean, you know, when I first came down here, the only development over by Lowe's was Plantations.
Yeah.
But now there are hundreds and hundreds of houses back there that didn't used to be there, and people are living in them, and people need to go to the grocery store, and people need to, you know, I mean, it's not that surprising when you look at how many houses there are. It's like, there's just going to be a lot of people. I mean, it's one of the reasons that, I mean, when you ask me about, like, do I feel it different? I've sort of stayed in Milton because I knew how crowded it was going to be. And I'm like, you know,
I got
stuff to do at home. And it's fine. You know, I'm happy with my house and that kind of thing. And I don't mind, you know, I don't need to get down to when I've come down to the beach, it's been like really early in the morning and go run on the beach and, you know, take a real quick dip. But well, I got this Irish burn and peel skin. So I've never been a huge sun person.
Right.
You know,
well, I think it is I think just the fact that we don't live in the town, obviously. We live outside of it, but we live far enough down there where we deal with the traffic all the time. So I'm like you. There was a time I'm like, I'm never leaving this. Love my spot. It's gotten so crowded. I'm like, we got to get out of this spot. So hopefully moving out this way eventually, if we ever get our house, we'll be like out of that traffic a bit. Maybe we can have a little more... you know, the choice to stay out of, because at this point, like, I have no choice. You got to go into it every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you been, have you seen, how's Milton doing? You seen Milton Theater? You been doing anything down there? Are you watching any of the changes? There's a lot of the Dough Roller. I forget what's all going up
and
down there.
The Dough Bar.
Dough Bar.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool, people are doing
a
good job.
There's a lot of cool little places in there. Yeah. It's nice to see them doing well, too, because some places had come in and then there was that sort of dip financially, and I didn't know if the Milton Theater was going to be able to continue, but they have, and they bring in stuff there. I haven't done anything there, you know, but I have gone to a few things there, and I was really impressed. They're doing a nice job and bringing, you know, different performers and events in. And
I don't know if they're... I know that the Revival House, I think they're still associated with the Milton Theater. I don't know if they're going to do that Third Thursday thing, though.
The movie Revival House thing?
Yeah, with Rob Waters. Yeah. Robs.
The Robs are doing. I don't know. I haven't talked to Rob in a bit about it. I mean, he did the
Jurassic Fest.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Yeah.
Did you go?
I was out of town.
It was a lot of fun. It was fun that night because everybody visiting went south and everybody local went north out to the Hudson Field. So it was almost just like a big locals reunion. You catch up with all your friends and stuff.
That's fun. It's a nice family event, too.
Oh, yeah. Kids had a good time. Yeah. A lot of great Smash Mouth Burger.
There you go.
Have you had that yet?
I have not, but it does sound good.
All right. I'm coming over.
We're doing an intervention
on your shut-in. Shut-in intervention. Now, these are your friends. Come out. These come outside.
Well, you know me. I'm a creature of habits. Like, if I go out to eat, it's like sushi. That's where I head for, you know. I do the same thing over and over again. You know me. You're the guy who tries different things. I'm like, when I find something that works, I just beat it to death.
Yeah, you know? Well, with three kids, we're not eating out anymore. Yeah. We're bringing back... Hashtag bringing back set middle class. Trying to save our money a little bit. So it is the week, right? 7 years. The anniversary of our good buddy Matt passing.
The great Matt Haley.
And, you know, we miss him, obviously. Any thoughts? Any memories? Any stories you want to chat about?
Well, you know, I mean, the great thing about Matt to me was that... you know, he tried to, as a friend, I always appreciated that he spoke truth. You know what I mean? And he would ask me the awkward question, like the question I didn't want to ask myself. He would just ask me, you know, and that's where I really valued him as a friend. You know, that sometimes I would talk to him about anything I was going through and he'd be like, He asked me this question, and he's like, "Does that make you feel insecure?" And I go, "Yes." You know, it was like he'd just, you know, put his finger right on it sometimes, and I don't know what that was about, except that he sort of identified his own feelings. Like when I would talk about what was happening with me, he would connect it to things that he'd gone through, and he would sort of honestly share that, you know, and that was always impressive to me, and. I remember one time, like I think I told you this story when he was still at the Third Edition in Rehoboth, and he was, you know, he was in the back room there, and my car broke down, and it was at a time where Ann and I had separated for a year. We were having a hard time, and I didn't know what was going to happen, and I was living in a winter rental down in Rehoboth, and I was feeling sorry for myself, and then my car broke down. And just as I was coming into Rehoboth, and I had to get over to Georgetown to work and all this stuff, you know, so I'm like really feeling sorry for myself. It's like, this is like 20 years ago.
I remember.
And I stopped into, I broke down somewhere in Rehoboth, so I was able to walk into the kitchen in the back room in the Third Edition, and Maddie was there, and he just went back in the office. So I'm like rehearsing my woes to him, you know, and I'm saying, oh, the car broke down. And he just looked at me and he goes, what are you going to do? That was it. But it was like, I mean, it sounds like nothing, but it was like everything. Because it was just, he's like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and listen to you whine. It's like, you're a grown man. What are you going to do?
Basically. He's not going to make suggestions for you.
No, he wasn't gonna fix it for me. Like, I was coming to him, and he wasn't wrong. I was coming to him to get somebody to fix it for me. I was like a baby, you know, and which is embarrassing because I was like 40 years old, you know? But and recovered for quite some time. But I still was like, in that moment, I just wanted to be a baby, and I want somebody else to fix it. And he's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And it was like, it seemed, to a lot of people, would seem like nothing. But to me, in the moment, it was like the greatest respect, and it brought me back to stop whining, do the next thing. Lots of people have problems, buddy, that they have to face, you know? And I wanted sympathy, and he's like, no. You know, I mean, I'm not giving you sympathy. I'm giving you, you know, and it was just this little piece of tough love that told me that he was genuinely my friend.
Well, and he had a way of making things very simple.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember that he used to tell me, "Hey, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it'll all be fine." And I'm like, yeah. "Okay, I understand that."
Right. It was a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
It's like when you consider how good you've got it, you stop whining and you get on with things.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you know, we love to make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that these habits that we get into, and he was great at kind of pointing them out. You know.
Yeah.
I forget what it was. He was having some party, and we were at a meeting or something. We're standing outside, and he's like, "Yeah, we're gonna have the party on Friday. You know, more than welcome to come." And I'm like, "I gotta work. Can we do it Saturday?" And he's like, "You think I'm gonna move the whole fucking party because you can't fucking make it?" I was like, "No,
I sort of did.
Of course not.
I was sort of hoping.
Maybe.
Yeah."
Little bit of sting, right? Hit me in the ego.
Yeah.
Little shame and guilt.
But it could go the other way, too, because I remember him. We're having a conversation. I've told you this story, too, where he said, "Well, James, I'm a pretty humble guy," and I just burst out laughing. And, you know, and after that, every time, it would be a joke between us. I would just say, "You know, man, I'm a pretty humble guy."
Well, he also used to go, "God damn, I'm good looking." He'd fix his hair.
Yeah. Or a waitress would come to the table, and then she'd take our order, and then she'd leave, and he'd look across the table at me, and he goes, "She wants me."
Right. Well, I remember when I had gotten into the hair business, and I'm like, "You know, can I cut your hair? You know, I gotta learn how to cut hair." He's like, "Sure."
Sorry, I didn't help you out much there, did I?
No.
No.
You fell short. But and so I remember I was an assistant at Bad Hair Day, and he came in, and I cut his hair, and I swear to God, he looked like Silver Elvis. And he's like, "Do something with it," you know. And I'm like, you know, everybody just he'd mess it up, and he'd be like, "I'm so good looking." You know? he could
thank
have been
you,
like the
much.
Next Anthony Bourdain. I wonder what, you know, we were talking a little
bit.
Well,
he seemed
morning.
To be sort of on the road to that when he passed. You know, there were a lot of things that he was doing and talking about doing that, you know, were sort of along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I would have, you know, I would have just liked to have seen where he was headed. You know, I would have liked to have seen what he could have done.
Sure.
Because he really, the world was his oyster.
No, he was at a high point. There's no question about it. And he had a lot of ideas in the works. And there were a lot of parts of his life right then that seemed to be coming together in great ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think there's a lot of stuff going on we didn't even know about.
Oh, of course. And that's always the way.
Back burner stuff.
Sure.
Well.
Sure.
We miss him.
Yeah.
His anniversary is, I guess, going to be Thursday.
Yeah.
The 20th. And, yeah. Godspeed, old Matty boy.
Yeah.
I hope.
Gone but not forgotten.
Yeah. God, it was a tough week. I remember it was today, this
week.
Day, and I remember getting a phone call. I think you called me. Matt's been in an accident.
Yeah.
I was like, what? But I was like never thinking he was going to die.
No, I was the same.
I'm like, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, his sister was texting me, and then I was at breakfast with Scott. We were at the Crystal, and his sister texted me and said he passed in the helicopter. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm. Yeah.
Fucking rough day, man. Well, we got him. We had him while we had him, right?
Right.
I owe everything, really, to him and me.
That's good, because that's what he would have made you say that.
I'd like to thank me and him.
He would have made you say that, too.
Yeah.
He was like, I mean, he always emphasized that, you know, and I always admired that, too, that he's like, you know, where I am and what I've got, I worked for it. And I put in what you have to put in to get here, you know, and he wasn't the kind of person who was like, all the credit goes to somebody else, you know. He was like, no, I worked my tail off, and, you know, I may have gotten, you know, scared enough to get to this position, but then it went past fear to something else, you know.
Well, he was great at, like, just teaching lessons. I don't even, you know, I still don't even know if he even knew he was teaching lessons.
No, he was just being himself.
Just, I remember
when
he was
just sharing experience, strength, and hope.
When he was my sponsor, he said, I want you to call me every day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, he clearly knows I got something to talk about, right? Because he wants to talk to me every day. I must have a wealth of knowledge or something, because he sees it. So I called him that first day, and I didn't get an answer. I don't know if he was like, okay, perfect, he's calling, I'm not answering. I don't know if it was this plan he had, or he just was busy and didn't answer. But the way that it worked out, it felt like it was some sort of some sort of plan he had. And I remember him, and I call him the second day, and I didn't get an answer. I'm like, what the fuck? Is the number right? Call the third day, no answer. I'm like, fuck this bullshit. Something's wrong. And then he answered on the fifth day, and I'm like, you know, and I'm pissed, right? But as soon as he answered, hey, man. He's like, hey, man, how's it going? I'm like, good. He's like, call me tomorrow. Bye. And I'm like, oh, what? But I started to, like, see, like, this role that I create, these scenarios that I create in my own head. Yeah. No, he doesn't like me. The phone's broken. And it's, I don't know if you can teach that. Sometimes no. I think you have to kind of grind through it and try to be aware and see it and understand it and maybe figure out how it plays a role in our life. I know that I went through a spectrum of feelings with that. I used to call it my 7-number prayer.
Right.
I remember I'd call him at 6:30 in the morning because I was like, well, I know he won't be up. So I know that that's the reason he's not calling. It can't be because he's avoiding me.
Right.
You know, so it was a trip.
But also you kept calling, you know, too. It's like that, you know, with other people that could go. I've seen that go a different way, too, you know, where the person just stops and gives up. So,
yeah, you know. Justified.
Yeah.
Justified quitting.
Sure.
Well, buddy, it's been an hour. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Always fun to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the
second conversation today. First conversation on the trail.
We've skipped here. Some like Afghanistan and politics for this podcast.
Please, thank you very much. I'm very glad. Going back over 4 presidential administrations.
Yeah, it's not.
We don't need to do that.
No, let's stay on our square. All right, buddy. Well, listen.
All right.
Have a great day. Good
you
luck
do the
with
same.
The library stuff. Hopefully
thanks.
That's
thanks. No, it's going well, and I'm looking forward to doing it. It's not been nice to have something.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Something
so maybe
performative
this is something
to do.
It's going
to
be something you'll be doing from here on out.
I hope so. I hope I'll stay involved with it. You know, the world of theater is only slowly opening back up. So
I see a plaque in your future.
We'll see. Oh.
Plaque.
Let's hope not. Maybe on my teeth, I think. Kind of plaque. That's about it.
We're dedicating this chunk of the library to James Keegan.
We're dedicating this chunk of the library to James Keegan's fantasy about himself.
And
all right.
Shakespeare.
Oh, that guy.
Shakespeare.
Yeah, that guy.
All right, buddy. Well, listen. Have a great day. I'll catch you later.
Do the same. Bye-bye. Bye.